Welcome to the Touring Car America Podcast. Where touring car racing comes to life. You'll get in-depth interviews with drivers, series officials, auto manufacturer reps, and unique personalities through SRO, America's Touring Car Division. This is the Touring Car America Podcast, and this is Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America Podcast 10 Questions, and I'm here with the driver of car number 60 in TCA, Nate Nuremberg. Nate, thanks for joining me. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me out here. I'm really excited about this.
Cool. Fun. All right, we're going to jump right into the questions. What was the first car you ever owned?
First car I ever owned was a 2004 Jetta GLI.
And was it like pristine condition? Or
yeah, it certainly was.
Oh, you did? Okay, you didn't get like a hand-me-down hunk of junk. You got a nice car. All right.
It was more of like my sister and I were supposed to share it, but I kind of took it.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works with sisters and cars, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, nah, you're not going to drive it. I'll just take it. And so it was my baby. That was my first baby.
All right. Question number two. What did you want to be when you were growing up? So when you were a kid, you know, say 5 to 15, what did you want to be?
Going to 5, that's a great question. There's probably a lot of things, but it was probably about 7 when I was like, I want to be a race car driver.
Okay. So you knew early on, was your family involved in racing, or how do you know about racing?
No one in my family was involved in racing outside of, spectators. So my grandpa would take, my dad and his two brothers, they went to the Indy 500 a couple of times. I would probably say my grandpa was probably the one who introduced me to it, or my dad, I would say. The first race I went to, I was 9, and that was the inaugural race, at the Michigan, 500 for kart back in the day.
Right. Cool. All right.
Question. That's what got me hooked.
Yeah. Question number three. And I know you have a sister, but do you have brothers and sisters? If so, how many and where are you in the mix?
I have one sister, and she is older than me. She's about 3.5 years older. So I'm the little baby of the family.
So you're the baby, and you stole the car. That's basically what I understand so far.
Exactly. Yeah.
Does she have any interest in racing at all, or is it she's totally into other things?
She's a model, so she does a lot of, you probably may have seen her at Target.
Oh.
Since Target's based in Minnesota, she does a lot of stuff, so her face is out there, but, the whole family's into racing. Like, we've been going, most likely I probably watched you actually race, at Road America during the World Challenge days and all that stuff, because I was there as a fan.
Right.
From, like, 98 till, like, I started racing and then just didn't go to the races anymore because I was there.
Right. Cool. Question number four, what's your go-to order at your favorite restaurant?
Oh, chicken fingers. Oh, man.
You're a chicken fingers kind of guy.
Chicken fingers or chicken tenders.
Do you like them spicy or just plain or what?
Just plain. Our northerners aren't too keen on spices all the time.
Yeah, northern Midwest is not super spicy, that's for sure.
Right.
Question number five. What do you wish you knew when you started racing that you know now?
How much of more of like a challenge it would be. I guess how much more fun I would actually have doing it. The biggest surprise is the family and the connection and the friends that you make. That's one thing I did not expect.
So the family and friends connections that you make, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before. I have heard people say they kind of come up through karting, and they say when they get into cars, the paddock's so friendly, and you can meet a lot of great people, where in karting, everyone's very closed off. But I haven't heard it quite.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Like, I came up through karting. My local track was pretty open. Like, we're from Minnesota, so I guess we all talk to each other. We're Minnesota nights, so it's a given. But, like, once I started getting to, like, the professional and, like, national karting things, it was really weird. It was super goofy, kind of, like, off-putting a little bit. as far as like how they're like, you can't really talk to anyone. Just like, oh, like there's the team and that's it. That was weird.
I got you.
Yeah, I mean the teams and the people that I meet at the tracks, the fans, all that stuff. It's something I definitely did not expect.
Cool. Question number 6. What's something that you failed at?
What's something I failed at?
Ooh. Yeah.
Let's see. I wanted to do a number of things before I hit 30, and most of those didn't happen.
What kind of things?
I don't have a house yet, so I'm still in an apartment. But, you know, I have small goals.
Right.
I wanted a house before I had a kid. Kid came first, but it's all good. I probably have to say, if I failed at one thing, it's getting done with college in a decent amount of time. It took me a number of years to get it done with, which is expensive.
Gotcha.
But I got it over with.
But it's done now, so that's good. Question number 7. If you could choose walk-up music like they do in baseball, what song would you pick for your walk-up music?
Oh, man. I might have to think about that one.
Yeah, that's fine. Everyone struggles with it. It's no one really thinks there's, about that. So we can come back to it, but I'm not going to let it drop. So you got to think about it while we're talking about the other ones.
There's a Prince song. I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to see if I can dig it up.
Okay, so it's a Prince song because he's from Minnesota, so you have to stay with the Minnesota roots. So I can understand that. Purple Rain.
It's not Purple Rain. It's another one that's got a little bit more of a saucy mix to it.
Okay. Well, we'll see if you come up with it. Question number 8. What do you do on a normal non-race weekend?
There's a lot of stuff. So I actually just had a son, 2-month-old. So that is what I typically do on a non-race weekend. Outside of that, I've got a good group of friends that I've known since I was a little dwarf. We hang out all the time, but mostly I'm also an Apple employee. So I'm one of the tech guys. I'm one of the geniuses. So I'm the one you see when you break your stuff. So I've been working for Apple for like 14 years.
Wow.
For a long time. So I still work on the weekends every once in a while, but mostly I got 2 dogs, got a good family with my wife and my little son. Mostly it's go to the pool at my parents' house or else hang out inside.
Cool.
Play some video games, you know, the typical.
Yeah, be with your son.
Big kid, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do what you can. Yeah. Hang out with your friends when you can.
Come watch me build some Legos, dude.
I like it. Yeah, we have a guy in World Challenge who's one of the stewards, actually, race director stewards, that is huge into Legos. Like, he builds like full-sized spaceships and stuff like that. Saturn V and that kind of crazy stuff. So if you need Lego help, we got a guy in the paddock that can help you, that's for sure.
That would also be me.
Question number 9. What's your favorite book?
I'm brain farting on the name right now. It was just there. Something Christmas pageant. Oh my goodness. It's a book that my grandma used to read me when I was a kid all the time, and I just loved it. Best Christmas pageant ever.
Okay. I wasn't expecting a Christmas pageant book being your favorite book, but that's cool. I'm down with it.
I just like the story.
There you go. So question number 10. When you're alone in your car, are you singing along with the music?
You know it.
What about if anybody else is in the car?
It depends on the people.
And when you're singing, are you acting out the song, like totally reliving the song and that kind of thing? Or are you just singing?
Yeah. Now, usually the lady and I will make up our own little, dance routines for them and all that stuff.
I got you. All right, the last chance. What was that walk-up music for Prince you're going to play?
That's what I was digging up right now.
And if you can't think of it, that's okay. We'll just say a Prince song.
Oh, man. I'm just brain farting on a name.
Well, you'll just have to tell me later, and I'll add it to the show notes if you think of it.
It might be Delirious, but I'll have to double check and listen to it.
Okay, we'll put that down as Prince Delirious. That sounds good. Nate, appreciate you playing along with TC America Podcast 10 Questions.
It was a pleasure.
Want to save money modifying your Mazda? Yeah, we thought you might like that. And now, thanks to the TC America Podcast, you can save 10% off your next purchase with Corksport. Corksport offers a full range of performance engine, handling, and styling parts for the Mazda 3, Mazda 6, Mazda Speed 3, MX-5, and more. So how do you get the 10% off from your favorite podcast, you ask? It's easy to do. Get your favorite parts on corksport.com and enter the promo code TCAmerica19, all in capitals, and the magic happens. You save 10%. This offer expires October 1st, 2019, so don't wait long to save. Love, Corksport.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America Podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is a TC America Podcast, and now we're going inside the series with the series manager, Jim Jordan. Jim, how are you? We're going to do a little Watkins Glen wrap-up.
I'm doing great, Joe. And, yeah, Watkins Glen was an interesting weekend in all the class.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. There was a couple sweeps. Mike McCann Jr. did sweep in TCR, and Mr. Pombo also swept in TCA. Did Johan sweep in I think it was all three swept, huh? So Johan swept in touring car, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah, there were brooms, I think, for the entire weekend. So, obviously, Watkins Glen is unusual based on what we've seen so far this year. Some track characteristics played into it. Certain cars have been demonstrating strengths and weaknesses all year. And by the time we got to Watkins Glen, there are some certain, just certain line and certain stars that found through a line for all three of those cars and teams that swept the weekend.
Yep, and we did have a change in the points lead for after coming out of Watkins Glen for TCA. Unfortunately, Whitmer had a little bit of a rough weekend where he had a crash in race one, and he had to use a different car in race two, so he scored minimal points. So he's now back in second in points for the first time all year after he won the first four races. So the 14-year-old Tyler Maxson has taken about a 10-point lead over both Whitmer and Pombo. So TCA, there's some changes going on, but there's still a tight battle with four races to go. And
yeah, I think any of those three can win the championship. Certainly, we're heading away from Watkins Glen. It was Whitmer's issue, and I will also say the issue that Chris Haldeman had. He's been the fastest Honda. That really kind of threw the TCA race greatly in the Mini's favor. The Mini has shown to be a pretty fast car. The biggest challenge it has is because it's powerful, it actually is the heaviest. And so I was somewhat worried, as they were, about the tires making it through. He only had one of his top three competitors. That allowed, I think, Pombo to kind of lead the race and manage the race from the front. He had some teammates that also kind of helped him in that regard. So it was obviously a really good weekend for Pombo and the Mini. I think the result could have been a lot different if Maxson had some other people up there battling. When you have a strong teammate, it sometimes makes it makes it a situation where you could control the race a lot easier than when you've got three or four more people battling. Taylor was quick, and she got on the podium in her Honda. Also had a pretty good chance for another podium on Sunday, so she cut down the tire. So I just think that everything fell in Minnie's way, and so Pombo took total advantage of it and just had a really, really good weekend. But, you know, I think that was unusual, and obviously Maxim did a great job. He's just been extremely consistent the last few races, and so that consistently put him in the points battle. And again, Whitmer, he qualified in the front row, so his Subaru obviously had some speed, although, again, it was a very short qualifying session just due to an accident, so we really don't know how it was all turned out had he had full qualifying. But, Whitmer in the Subaru is always going to be in contention, and if he can get on a roll to end the season like he did begin the season, he still has a good shot to be champion. But again, the Copeland folks really know how to make that Mazda go fast, and Max, and he's just he's kind of gotten a little more mature and a little bit showing more and more talent with every race weekend.
Yeah, he's developed all year, and he is doing a good job. You know, interesting, in the team championship, the Mini JCW team is actually leading after Watkins Glen. Tech Sports second, 8 points behind. Copeland's third, mainly because they're now just running one Global MX-5 Cup and TCA, so they're down to 167 in third. X-Factor with their fleet of Hondas is fourth with 137. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Taylor Hagler, because she had her first pole position, which is very exciting. And unfortunately, there was a TCR car spun in turn one in the second race, and Taylor was the first one upon it and spun as well. So she went to the back, but she was flying in that Civic. And I do believe that if Haldeman didn't break his car, he probably could have been up front. I think it was a real Civic SI track. I think Road America may be similar. But I guess we'll see when we get there. So TCA is up for grab, though, between Tyler Max and Nick Whitmer and Mark Pombo. I think those three, yeah, I think they're all within 15 points. And anything can happen in four races. So I see that going down to the last race at Las Vegas. And
I think TCA is going to be a championship that's honestly decided on the last lap of the last race of the season.
And that's the way it should be. I hope it's that way, for sure. I hope we're all wondering what's going to happen the whole time. It makes it really fun. And I kind of blew it because I didn't mention that I've gotten so used to Johan dominating. Paul Terry in touring car actually won the first day at Watkins Glen. He started about fourth or fifth, took him a few laps to get going, and then he just started mowing down the field and opened up a little bit of gap, won by maybe like a second, but he still got his first touring car win in that 370Z for Reardon. So congratulations to him after he missed a few races. So that was pretty big for him. I know he had to be excited.
Yeah, first, I like diversity in start winning. Paul just had a very challenging beginning to the season. So to see his performance at Portland and then to take the win, like you said, race number one at Watkins Glen, just very happy for the whole team. Paul's been a competitor for a while now. And again, it's just great to see him reach a certain level of consistent performance. So, glad to see that. In that race, Johan was sort of sitting there waiting for Paul to make a mistake, but Paul never did. So, Johan, whether if the championship were on the line, he may have made some charges, harder charges at Terry, but he drove like champion does and took what he had that day. And again, just kind of a continue to build on his swing
fleet. Yeah, he's now with Toby Grahovic. He didn't score any points at Watkins Glen, only scored one in the last race at Portland. So he's only got 1 point in the last three races. Johan's got a huge lead now. It's 80 84-point lead on second place. So as long as he finishes races, I think that that's the only caveat. I think he'll win the championship. You know, from there on out, it's a dogfight from second to fifth between Toby Grahovic, Robert Nemkov, Steve Strymer, and Paul Terry, with the Cameron Evans and Chandler Hull also right there as well. So it's kind of between six people for second place with four races to go. So it'll be interesting to watch that as well.
Is someone who also had a good watching plan but doesn't necessarily show as well in the results was the return of Jeff Rika. But two exciting things about Jeff at watching plan. First, he brought out his new Hyundai Veloster N, which he's building to TC Class Spec, and it's a beautiful car. He wanted to show that to our tech people just to get sign-off on various things. He's still hoping to debut that car at the finale at Las Vegas. But he's got his Genesis out there, and he was running up front, and he was sort of crushed on Sunday because he had a podium position, was running a solid third, and the temperature was such and the pace was such that he actually ran out of gas on the last lap, so fell back to sixth. But again, great to see Jeff back into the hunt. Great to see his whole family out there supporting him and helping him too. So that was one of the nice stories in the TC class.
Yeah, it was great to see Jeff. He was fast, and his finishes, I think he ended up sixth in both races, really weren't indicative of the speed he had, so that's good that you pointed that out. Going into Road America, Rooster Hall Racing leading the team championship, Classic BMW second. They're 80-some-odd points behind. Auto Technique is third. They're only 29 points behind Classic BMW. And then Copart Bimmer World is fourth, and Reardon is fifth. So that's kind of your top five going into the last four races in touring car. Let's talk about TCR a little bit. Michael McCann Jr., who I had no idea he had such limited race experience, because, man, he was flying at Watkins Glen. He dominated really both days and just really had that Audi going. And I talked to him. I did an interview with him. And he says he spent the whole time getting the car to work through turn one, because he just figured that if he could get it to work through turn one, by the time they got to the bus stop, he'd be able to get by anybody because of the nature of the car, and that he could hold on the rest of the way until he got back to turn one again. And it'd be really hard for people to pass him. So I thought that was an interesting setup process that he did for that race.
Yeah, I will say he's been a really interesting talent to watch this year. started the season in a DSG Cup car, and after they watched the performance of the sequential car at VIR, he decided he wanted to move in that direction. So he's just shown really every race faster and faster. The Audi is also, I think, the three-box design of the Audi. In other words, it's much more of a traditional sedan-type car with a hood, a roof, and a trunk. I think that's got an aero advantage, so the Audi is always the highest top speed. So a track like Watkins Glen, not taking anything away from Michael, because he certainly earned the win. I will say that the Audi on the high speed track has probably got something over everybody a little bit. But again, it's great to see him. The McCann Racing folks are just an absolute pleasure to have in the paddock. And again, the few number of races he's done to come out and sleep a weekend, it's awfully impressive. The FCP Euro guys, it was kind of their home race. They brought out a lot of employees. Friends, family, and employees were all watching Glen, and I tell you what, that just sure made Victory Circle a great place to be. Lots of excitement, lots of cheering. And I will say Michael continues to just show the way to everybody out there how you win a championship. He is just absolutely consistent. He's won when it's available. When it's not available, he's always on the podium. And that's how you win championships. So he's slowly stretching out his point lead. And, again, he's definitely the guy to beat the last few races. He has quite the point lead that Johan has. But certainly he's got a pretty decent lead right now.
Yeah, he's got a 40-point, a little bit over 40-point lead, the 44-point lead going into Road America. So there hasn't been a race where he hasn't scored good points. I think his worst finish is maybe a fourth all year. So that tells you something right there about his consistency. So it may actually be a third, but he's may have made it to the podium every single race, and that's how you win a championship. So, yeah, Michael Hirkson's doing an incredible job. It was a little surprising to see Mason Felipe and the Copeland Motorsports Hyundai a little bit off the pace. Had some sort of a problem. The second race didn't score any points. And Victor Gonzalez was quick at times, but had some problems that unfortunately held him back a little bit. And James Walker was just off the podium on the second day and in the Alpha. I think he set the fastest race lap, though, so that was good for him.
James has been fast in that car. He's one of these people that are poised for a breakthrough. I hope that breakthrough comes sooner rather than later, because, again, there's no team that works harder on that Alpha program than Ricci does. And they're consistently fast. Just got to figure out how to get to the clean end. And I will say, early in the season, Walker's only chink in his armor was the first few laps of the race. It took him a few laps to get going. I think he's done much better. His pace from lap one, I think, is better than it was beginning of the year. So, again, I expect him to break through one of these last four races. I think it will be Alpha's first victory in the series. And Felipe was just a little bit of a heartbreaker on that second race. Apparently, it was a fuel pump issue. And, it was just he obviously struggled. It was too bad to see that, because he's a quality competitor, runs really fast. And we
didn't
do well.
Yep. And in the TCR Cup, we had a newcomer, his first race weekend with us. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because he worked as a crew chief for Circuit of the Americas and St. Petersburg. But he actually drove for the first time in the series at Watkins Glen, Travis Hill. He won both days. It kind of makes it look like he dominated, but it was a royal battle between him and Brian Putt and Steven Vaja or Vida, I think you say his name, if I get it correctly, and Eddie Killeen. Yeah, it was a nonstop battle for that TCR Cup place. So it was good racing there.
Yeah, it was. Brian, again, we talked to Michael, but Brian is just, he's now positioning himself to win the championship. So he's not going to take any chances. He's just going to take everything he can. And that did a good job. Christian Cole also is someone who's he's consistently in that battle for the podium. The PSG Cup was good with the Canadians coming down. We had some Canadian touring car teams come down to visit us. And again, they took two wins. Just always like to see as many PCR cars as possible out there.
Yeah, and that kind of concludes the wrap-up from Watkins Glen. Excited to see the new touring car from Gen Racer and Jeff Rica. That's the second race week in a row where we've had cars come to tech and get inspected, getting ready for hopefully the last race of the year and headed towards next year. So we had a Mazda 3. Now we've got the Velociter N for TC. So that's really exciting stuff. So looking forward to Road America and see what transpires there.
Absolutely. Should be fun and get another high speed track, maybe even faster than Watkins Glen. So it's going to be interesting just seeing all three classes, how everybody deals with getting back to the front end of the grid.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'll talk to you next week on preview of Road America. So thanks for coming on today, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Talk to you soon.
Want to save money modifying your Mazda? Yeah, we thought you might like that. And now thanks to the TC America podcast, you can save 10% off your next purchase with Corksport. Corksport offers a full range of performance engine, handling, and styling parts for the Mazda 3, Mazda 6, Mazda Speed 3, MX-5, and more. So how do you get the 10% off from your favorite podcast, you ask? It's easy to do. Get your favorite parts on corksport.com and enter the promo code TCAmerica19, all in capitals, and the magic happens. You save 10%. This offer expires October 1st, 2019, so don't wait long to save. Love, Corksport. This is the TC America podcast, and I'm here with Steve Strymer, driver of car number 81 for Rooster Hall Racing. It's a BMW M240i. Steve, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Joe.
So we do this podcast so people can really understand the different personalities that are involved in touring car. You know, you're from the Pacific Northwest. There's not a ton of drivers from the Pacific Northwest. So I know through some earlier conversations that you're third generation from Portland. So talk about that a little bit. Your family arrived at Portland from where?
My grandfather was born in Canada and came down into the States as a young man, about 7 or 8, and kind of set roots here. And our family, shortly after he got out of the war, he started Strymer Sheet Metal, which is our family-owned business. And so that has been in existence in Portland since 1946. And I'm third generation.
That's cool. And you're born in Portland, and you have two sisters, from what I understand. What was it like growing up? I know your family was entrepreneurial because you had the family business, but I imagine they, like my kids, I called them slave labor. So I use my kids as slave labor all the time. I kind of imagine that's what it was like growing up in a family with the sheet metal business.
Oh yeah, definitely. My memories along those lines are coming down to the shop, helping out, doing sweeping, janitorial type stuff, cleaning up things, as well as I got a little older, then we're in the HVAC business, so I was often enlisted to climb up inside the duct and
because you're small enough, right?
Yes, exactly. Not something that I don't even think we would do those things today. We'd be too worried about what we're breathing in and all that kind of stuff. But it was a good growing up.
Well, whatever you're breathing in, it kind of explains your personality now and your hitches that you have when you shake your head.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So. Growing up in an entrepreneurial family can have its challenges, and it can be extremely exciting and fun as well. What were the biggest challenges that you think your family faced as an entrepreneurial family?
Oh, boy. I think it's time. Time's the biggest thing. As a family, we quite a few sacrifices just from the standpoint of having the whole family together at any one time. But, we did have lots of fun along the way as well, had plenty of opportunities to travel as part of, as a side to other business activities that took us around the country. And so, I don't know that I would really look at the difficulties. They're just, a different
part of the culture, right?
Yep.
And So when you were growing up, were you, as a kid, were you fascinated with cars or anything like that? Or what were you into as a child growing up?
So as a child, I've always been into competitive sports. So whether it was, you know, team sports like soccer or individual things, as a young person, I raced BMX. And then as I got a little older, I got into racing motocross. And I also did some skiing at not really competitive racing, but as a ski instructor for a while. So I've always, whatever I've done, I've tried to tackle and try to become the best at it that I possibly can. And I, shortly after graduating from school, getting married, having my daughter, then kind of set those things aside. Never really was into cars per se, other than I did a little four-wheel drive. I had a Toyota 4x4 in high school, and you know, I always appreciated cars, like to keep them, you know, real nice, and spent weekends washing and waxing them and those kind of things, but never any competitive driving or anything until I turned about 37 years old is when I got into that. I always had a dream to have a Porsche, and at 37 I decided that it was time to do that, and once I got that, started doing some autocross and on track activities, and the rest is history.
Yeah, the first that you came across my tracking was, I believe you're in a Viper, doing some of the Viper stuff. But so you started with getting a street Porsche, and then autocrossing it and doing track days and that kind of thing, and that kind of lit the fuse a little bit.
Totally. Yep. Yeah, exactly. I was doing autocross kind of on my own, and then I, through the Porsche Club, have learned about the opportunities to put the car on track. And actually, that first event I went to, there was an opportunity there. A local racer, Cindy Lux, she was offering some coaching, and I could, you know, have her sit right seat with me on a track day and kind of teach me, you know, how to get around the track. And we just hit it off that first day, and she's been my coach ever since. I actually started working with her, and ultimately, at the time, she was a head instructor at Miller Motorsports out in Salt Lake, so she got me, introduced me to the opportunity there to get my racing license through their school, and so here I am today.
Yeah, I've got a long history with Cindy too. I raced against her when I first started racing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've known her for a long time. She knows the Jordan brothers for a long time, that's for sure. And she is quite the accomplished racer. Still runs in Trans Am now. And she was in Southern California when I met her. Her and Fred moved up to the Pacific Northwest and have been doing that in the Miller Motorsports thing for a while. And that's cool to hear. And I'm glad that you found someone who's as personable and as she is and knowledgeable to kind of shepherd you through the beginning and even to this day. So, so I know that you did the Porsche after the Porsche. How soon did the Viper come along after the Porsche?
So I raced in a couple of different Porsche Cup cars for a couple of years, did the, at the time it was the Pirelli Cup, now it's the Porsche Trophy USA West, I believe.
Yeah, it's a West, just so people know, it's a West Coast Porsche spec type series for, I guess it's 991s and 997s now or something like that, but it's a West Coast series predominantly that caters to a lot of people who run Porsches around here.
Yep, exactly. And so I did that for several years, and actually Fred and Cindy Lux supported. So Cindy did the coaching, and Fred and his team supported my car and was my crew chief. And so I did that for several years, and as I continued to develop at during that period of time, Cindy wasn't doing a lot of racing, and she decided that she wanted to go into Trans Am. As you know, Cindy and Fred have been longtime Dodge people and done a lot of racing of Vipers. And so when they decided that they wanted to get back into Trans Am, Cindy approached me and asked me if I wanted to transition from a student to a teammate. And I was very interested in that opportunity, and also getting some exposure for, you know, more tracks. Most of the tracks I'd raced at were on the West Coast, and as part of my just ongoing development. Our first year kind of in Trans Am, the goal was just really to get introduced to more tracks. And yeah, so we chose the Dodge Viper as the car that we wanted to drive, and so that's it. I think it was 2016 that I went out and purchased a Dodge Viper, and then raced 2 years with Cindy and Trans Am there.
And so the Porsche, what year was that when you started running the Porsche approximately?
2014 was.
Okay. It's all pretty recent then.
Cup. What's that?
It's very recent, so you have not been doing this a long time.
Correct. Yeah, my 2010 was my first year of racing.
Right.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, and I guess what I try to tell people is that what I love about touring car is it's attainable for a normal person to race in.
Absolutely. Yep.
You don't have to have a ton of experience. You don't have to have you have to have a good budget, but you don't have to have a ridiculous budget. And you can do this. And I think you're proof in the pudding right there. I mean, you didn't start till you were in your late 30s and really didn't have that much interest in it until you started to do it. And then, you know, once you got that initial taste, you were plunging down that that rabbit hole. And what did what did your wife and your daughter think about this, all of a sudden, this newfound passion?
Oh boy. Well, my wife would rather have me have a different interest, I'm sure. It started off, I mean, she's been, both my wife and daughter are extremely supportive. It is a drain. It takes, a lot of time, being away and being on the road and those kind of things. And so, I'm sure she's, secretly hoping that someday I'm going to, hang it up, but I don't know that I'm. That's in the near future.
Yeah, hopefully, she won't listen to this podcast then.
Right.
Yeah, people don't realize the drain it is on a family that maybe hasn't been around it their whole lives. My brother Jim, who works for the series, runs a touring car series. He started racing when he was 18. He's 9 years older than me, so I've been around it my whole life. But he was the first one in the family to be involved in racing. So, but I've been around it forever, 80% of my life. But when somebody new comes in like you, I imagine it's got to be a little bit of a strain and it's really the time and the thought commitment that it takes. I mean, when you're driving a car at 10 tenths, you have to be totally focused. And, and what I describe, you're a business owner and it's been a family legacy business. It's one of those things in a race car, you don't worry about the business when you're in the car. You don't worry about family issues or your daughter or any of those things while you're in the car. You're focused on one thing, and that's trying to win the race. And how I describe to people, and you can disagree with me, is that you're able to have a goal and know if you achieve that goal by the end of the weekend. And if you don't, right. you work on plans to fix it. So it's a really yep. short-term thing. Almost every race weekend, it's a new goal. It's always the same goal. But you know, if you succeeded in business, there are things that you're doing that aren't going to affect your business for 5 years. And it's hard to see the response and the, how your decisions affect that. When a race weekend, you can. And I'm sure it's a bit of an escape for you to go to the racetrack and do this and to just totally immerse yourself in something that you'll know at the end of the weekend if you succeeded or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. You know, if you made the comment about being really focused, and this is, for me, it is a real, it's probably the most, I'm the most relaxed in a race weekend. I mean, there's a lot going on and whatnot, and it's an intense, it takes an intense level of focus. That is kind of my space, being in the race car, where I can kind of shed the everyday stresses and, like you say, get some immediate gratification one way or the other of whether or not I'm accomplishing what I'm setting out to do.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of guys who own businesses that run race cars, and they do it purely as a way to just relax. And yep. a lot of people probably think it's a crazy way to relax, but it's, you know, it's just single focus. And I think that's exciting and great for you. So you did the Trans Am and for a couple of years, and then you arrived to us in TC America last year, and you ran the Nissan 370Z. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
That was your first year in World Challenge in TC America?
Yeah, it was. It was really after, as I kind of look at my race career as, you know, trying to continue to evolve in my abilities and experiences, whether it's learning new tracks or learning racecraft, et cetera. And so I really, when I joined World Challenge, the idea was to, I was seeking a higher level of competition and bigger fields and really work on the racecraft side of things.
And do you think that's been successful? Do you feel that you've achieved those goals, that part of your goal?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still learning every single weekend, I definitely wouldn't say I've reached the pinnacle of that experience yet, but it provides the environment, I'm excited to get out there every single time and do my best.
And I believe you won a race last year in the Z, is that correct?
I did, yeah. VIR has been kind of a good place for me. 2 years in a row. So, that is. I did win my first race there last year in the Z.
And when you won in the Z car, were you surprised, relieved, excited? Do you think it was all going to be easy after that, or what?
Oh man, I was a hard fought deal. If I remember right, I had Jeff Frieka on my tail, probably for the last, 5-10 laps, and, really had to, I was, working hard, that particular race. It was just exhilarating. I mean, I no feeling like it, to reach the podium, let alone first place my first year. That was a tremendous feeling.
Right. And this year you transitioned to the Rooster Hall Racing BMW from the Z. And I remember talking to you at COTA, and you described to me that the braking was just so much different between the Z and the BMW, and you're having a little bit of a struggle transitioning. Mainly trail braking of the BMW was extremely different than the style you did with the Z.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that was, the two cars are completely different. the Z is very nimble. You've got to be up on the wheel to get the most out of the car. And actually, we had some, you know, we had some difficulties in the Z with some ABS interaction when we didn't want it to be interacting. And then transitioning to the BMW, one of the biggest things for me, not being that it's a paddle shift, I was starting to transition to left foot braking. So this year is the first year that I've gone to 100% left foot braking. And so I had some learning to do there. And as you reference, particularly the first few times I was in the car, I was really having a hard time. I was a little heavy on the brakes, and the nose of the car would set in such a way that I was having a hard time rotating the car through the corner with that trail braking. We've done some adjustments to the car now, and it's a combination of those adjustments in our setup, as well as me being a little lighter on my brake release. I think we've kind of found our way through that.
Yeah, but, so up until that point, you'd only use your left foot for the clutch. So
yep, that's right.
If you can imagine someone stepping on a clutch with their left foot and then having to retrain the left foot to use the brake, that is a little bit of a steep change, a big change. So I can understand why, you know, you were heavy with your left foot at first.
Yep.
I think everyone is. And I remember back when I was teaching my son, when he was running spec Miata, had a left foot brake. I told him the only time you should really left foot brake in a car with a gearbox like a Miata is when you don't have to shift. But when you don't have to shift, it's a huge advantage. And the first few times he did it, he struggled. You know, he really struggled.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to practice. And I know at COTA when you were there, it was mixed conditions. So it was wet, dry, some wet, some dry, which would make that even more difficult. So I can understand why that would be a difficult transition.
Yep, absolutely.
So you show up at VIR, and lo and behold, you seem to have solved that in one weekend.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, we did get a little testing in before that event as well, so that helped. But yeah, it's you know, because of my work schedule, unfortunately, I don't have the opportunity to be in the car near as much as I'd like. So while I've owned this car, you know, for just about a year now, you know, coming into the season, I had driven it really one test weekend before the first race.
Right.
And then since then, we've done one additional test. But other than that, you know, I've only been in the car 10 times or something like that.
So right.
Not a lot of experience yet with it. It's learning every time.
Yeah, and I know you have Johann Schwartz as a teammate, and I'm not sure how much help he gives you because you seem to be almost as quick as him. Most of the races, you're right there on his tail or ahead of him. So I'm not sure how that relationship works, but talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's great having Johann as a teammate. Definitely am learning a ton. You know, the opportunity to be able to share data, that was one reason that I wanted to make a switch to another team is last year when I was racing the 370Z and as an only driver in that car, just, you know, took so much longer to adapt and make changes because I had no reference. And so Johann and I and our Richard, our teammate, the race, the first couple of races with us, just really are able to build off each other, see where each other is stronger, and that's, you know, really helped me step up my game this year.
That's great. You're now fourth in the points, I believe. And what's your goals for the remaining part of the year?
Yeah, so I am just was able to recover to fourth in the points. Had a bad, really not a great event here in Portland. So I came into Portland third in the points, and then didn't have a very good result, and so dropped down to fifth. my aspiration is really, I do want to be in the top three this season. So I think I'm, I don't know, 7 or 8 points away right now. And this next event's going to be a tough one. Road America, well, I love that track. But it's a fast track. So a couple of the, you know, the 370Z and the Hyundai are going to be hard to beat. But we'll do our best.
So you feel that the BMW is better in torque or handling type circuits?
Yeah. Top speed is not one of its strong suits, I'm sure, you know, we'll be able to give them a good fight, but top speed is where a little bit sacrificed there.
Sure. So the goal is to get top three in points by the end of the year, and probably to get on the box one more time. We only have 4 races to go, Road America in a week and a half, and then Las Vegas at the end of the year. Do you have any thoughts about Las Vegas?
Oh, man, I don't even know what to expect. Never raced at Las Vegas, as I understand it. The track that is being laid out and approved by the FIA has not ever been run. And so this is going to be kind of a first time for everybody. I'm really excited about it. But, yeah, it's a big unknown.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting way to finish the season because no one's going to have an advantage on knowing the track. So it's right. Going to be who can adapt the quickest is going to be the people who do well. And for a guy like yourself, who's pretty new, that's always exciting because there's so many people who have been running for years. And I can tell you that probably half the field or more in TC at Road America has probably run that track over 10 to 20 times in their career.
So right.
Going to Vegas, there's no one's run it. And, I actually raced there in the late 90s on the Roval. But that's even changed now because they changed the infield for some fan experience stuff. So from what I've been hearing, it's going to be, you know, almost like a temporary circuit in a way.
Gotcha.
But it has gotten FIA approval. We're excited to go there. It's definitely going to be a different experience, which I think is also very fun. And have you thought about next year at all and what you're hoping to do for next year?
Yeah, we have been talking about it a little bit. Still putting some final plans together. I'm hoping to continue to be racing with Rooster Hall Racing. I've just seemed to really fit well in with that group, and they certainly know how to set up these cars. So I'm excited about that.
Cool. And is there any promotional partners you want to plug before we finish up this interview?
Yeah, I want to thank Redline for helping being a sponsor of the team for oil and other fluids, and also want to thank my own company, Strymer, for supporting me as well.
That's great. Steve, I really appreciate you taking your time out of your schedule to do this. I hope it gives insight to people that maybe haven't started racing yet, but they're in their later years and want to race. So you're a prime example of what happens when a guy who starts late focuses on it and really works hard to achieve goals. You know, you're a 2-time winner in touring car, and I've seen you just grow even this year. So it's exciting to see, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Touring Car America podcast, where touring car racing comes to life. Please like, comment, and subscribe to the show. And for more series information, go to the series website at tcamerica.us.